I just find it fascinating that so many of the issues that are out there right now are based on this false notion that men and women are completely interchangeable.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway talking about her presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
I mean, all these really hot-button issues are based on some confusion about where men and women are equal, in what terms are they equal, and then, you know, most importantly, how are we different, and is that difference a bad thing? Is it a good thing? You know, what does God have to say about these differences, and, you know, how should the Christian think about these differences? So I am so excited to come to this conference and talk about these issues, which animate so much of our political and social and cultural discourse, and also the things we struggle with in the church as well.
You can meet and hear Molly Ziegler-Hemingway making the case for the differences between men and women June 19th and 20th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
These women that claim to be feminists are so upset with the Huffington Post for daring to publish a woman's opinion.
It's all from this idea that God keeps his distance from us, and nothing could be further from the truth.
If anything, they would have to use the word revision, revise the Quran, delete the violent passages.
They should ask those people to report the news in a balanced and accurate fashion, the way they're supposed to, not under the doctrines of the Bible, under the doctrines of journalism.
When he goes to university in the big city, he'll choose to hang around with people who only think like him, whereas in his small community, he was forced to deal with people who thought he was an idiot.
An hour from now, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. This week, we've got five soundbites for you to choose from. You listen, then you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, or go to our Facebook fan page where we have left space for you to vote in advance for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, facebook.com/issuesetc, and your vote will decide which of those will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Well, she wrote this piece called Dear Daughter, Here's Why I Don't Work, and the internet melted a little bit. It appeared on the Huffington Post site, and a lot of people liked it, and a lot of people did not. A lot of women liked it, and a lot of women certainly did not. Joining us to talk about stay-at-home motherhood and the feminist reaction to it, Lydia Lovrick. She's a mother of three children in Canada, a frequent guest commentator for BBC Radio, and author of a recent column for the Huffington Post titled, Dear Daughter, Here's Why I Don't Work. Lydia, welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Todd.
Do you stay at home now? Are you a stay-at-home mom now because you didn't enjoy being a career woman?
Absolutely not. I loved my job. I was lucky enough to get paid to argue. I had my own radio show, my own syndicated column when I was still in my 20s. So I loved what I did. But I always knew, even back in, you know, when I was a high school student, that if I made the decision to have kids, it shouldn't be just about me anymore, because now there's a baby in the picture. And I just don't understand why women think that they absolutely have to keep going 100%, you know, in terms of their career and put their babies, I think, second. At the end of the day, kids need you when they're really young. As they get older, I think they need you less. And I'll still have plenty of time to get back into writing and radio when my kids are older. I can expect to do that for 20, 30 years. I don't see why it would be so important to add another 5 or 10 years to that. How does that make a difference? Yet it makes such a profound difference to children.
So you're saying from the working woman's perspective, you can have it all, just not all at once,
You can't have it all at the same time. Of course not. I mean, you know, women that work full-time like to say that they're still a full-time mom, they're always a mom. Okay, yes, you still have children, but at the end of the day, someone else is caring for your child the majority of their waking hours. So, you know, spending 1 or 2 hours with your kid before bedtime, I don't think is going to have the same impact as actually being with them, you know, the majority of the day, like a stay-at-home mom would be. So, I mean, it can't. If you're working full-time, you're working, let's say, 8-9 hours a day. Is that the same as someone that goes to the office for 1 or 2 hours a day? Probably not. You wouldn't call that person a full-time worker. So why would they be a full-time mom?
So let's talk about how this priority is, well, I would say this priority is natural. That there is a, that there's an impulse here. Not that working outside the home is unnatural. That's also natural, but it's a matter of priorities, isn't it?
Well, absolutely. Of course it's natural for a mom and a baby to be together. I mean, when did it go out of fashion for mothers to be with their babies? A baby is born and instantly comforted by the smell, the scent of her mother, by the mother's touch. They know the mother's voice. I mean, every parent knows that. And, you know, to suddenly have that person disappear for 9-10 hours a day is stressful on babies. There are so many studies, Todd, that show us that children who are in daycare actually have higher cortisol levels. That's a stress hormone. So these children are stressed out. They are 1 and 2 years old, and they are stressed. And I can't believe that that isn't a wake-up call, parents. You know what? Do you need to have a cell phone? Do you need to have 2 cars? Do you need to go on a vacation every single year? Are there things that you can do to cut back on material goods so that you can actually spend more time with your children?
What kind of reaction have you been getting to your Huffington Post piece?
Oh, boy. A lot. And I seem to have made a lot of working mom, a lot of militant feminists quite angry. You know, what's interesting is that these women that claim to be feminists are so upset with the Huffington Post for daring to publish a woman's opinion. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what it is. It's my honest opinion. I've always felt this way. And, you know, they're indignant that the Huffington Post would actually publish that such an article. And so I find that highly ironic, because I think that all women should be able to voice their opinion and have a voice. And really, the reason I wrote it, we see so many pieces written by working moms and applauding working moms. You very rarely see the other perspective. And I'm not just writing for stay-at-home moms. I'm writing, I think, on behalf of little ones who can't write themselves. Of course a little kid wants to be with mom. I mean, that's just common sense. And people will say to me, well, what if you have to go to work in order to put food on the table? Well, you know what, then? If it came down to that, I would open a home daycare. I would still be with my little ones, and I would watch other people's children so that I could make some money to put food on the table, to make sure that there's a roof over their head. That's what I would do while my kids were young. When they're at school full time, when you don't have any little ones at home, you can do what you want then. But I think that we owe it to kids to at least give them those first few years.
Any reaction from women who say, finally, somebody has expressed what I have believed all along and been ashamed, perhaps embarrassed, to say myself?
Yes, yes. Well, first of all, I mean, the article seems, it has over 20,000 likes. I've heard from just one mom today who said that even though she's a working mom, and she said even though the article really stung her, it hurt her to read those words. She said it hurt her so much because deep down she knew it was true, and she actually has made the decision now to at least reduce her hours at work and try to figure something out. It might even involve moving to a more affordable place. But she said that that's her goal then, just to be able to spend more time with her kids. She has a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, and she wants to be there more. So I think that's wonderful. So yeah, no, I am hearing from stay-at-home moms as well, who are happy that finally something is out there that it's not necessarily a throwback to the 1950s. People like to say that. I think it's laughable to think that it's controversial to say that a mom should be with a baby or a mom should be with a toddler. How is that controversial? Like, how that just speaks so low of society if that statement is somehow controversial.
Well, let's talk a bit about how you think this kind of received orthodoxy from feminism that obviously cannot be challenged in, you know, places just like the Huffington Post. What effect does it really have? Let's go a little deeper. What are the detrimental effects of accepting that feminist orthodoxy, and women who say, you know, I think I'd like to stay home with my kid, but society is telling me not to. What's the long-term effects?
Yeah, I think that a lot of women who are bright, who are intelligent, educated, they feel like they're somehow selling out if they decide to stay at home, that they need to go out there full throttle and pursue a career, or, you know, somehow they're just not contributing to society. That's how feminism has made these women feel. Now, I happen to know a number of stay-at-home moms who have degrees from university, very intelligent, had great jobs before they became mothers. Some of them never thought in a million years that they would want to be a stay-at-home mom, but then they had the baby and they couldn't bring themselves to be separated from the baby for, you know, the entire day. So they did a 180 and they just decided, you know what, I'm going to stay home now. I can always go back to work in a few years from now, but right now my baby needs me more than the office needs me. I mean, how sad that women need to feel fulfilled by working in an HR department, by doing paperwork, when you've got a little one who you are just, you know, the sun and the moon to them. You are everything to them. And yet you're just, in my mind, abandoning them every single day.
You mentioned before the often used criticism that this is trying to drive us back to Ozzie and Harriet, the 1950s, this kind of anachronistic, this isn't the way the world works anymore. Make the case that this is the way that the world can still work.
Well, you know, I certainly don't stay home because my husband told me that that's something I should do. I stay home because I very much want to, and we are a family. We're a team unit. Me staying home allows my husband the opportunity to succeed at his job. He's not the dad at work that has to say, oh, it's my turn to go get the kids from daycare. I have to leave early today, or my little one is sick. I have to take the day off. He doesn't have to do those things, and because of that, he's able to get promotions and raises. So it's benefited our family that way as well. And I really do think of it as we're a team unit. I don't think about, oh, what happens if, you know, we get divorced. I think part of the reason so many couples do get divorced has to do with the two income families, two people that are working full time and just so busy, so chaotic. And I think it's hard to keep a marriage together in that case.
So in other words, your staying at home not only benefits your daughter, first priority, it benefits you, but it also benefits your husband. He is able to be a better employee because he knows you've got the home fires burning, so to speak.
Absolutely. And I mean, it makes him happy knowing that. And we happen to have three little ones, so he's happy knowing that they have their mother, and that, you know, the two older ones now, they go to school, and I'm able to be there to volunteer for school trips, to volunteer in the classroom. I'm there at 3 o'clock when they're done school, and those things mean a lot to little kids. I mean, there will come a time when they won't want me around so much, and that's fine. I mean, that's the way it should be. But when they are little, they absolutely want to spend time with their mom. So it would honestly break my heart to be away from them, you know, for most of the day, like a lot of working moms are.
Finally, Lydia, what do you want your daughter? You addressed this to your daughter in the Huffington Post piece. What do you want your daughter, what do you want all of your kids to know about you staying at home with them?
Well, I mean, I do it because I love them. Have we made sacrifices? Yes. But I mean, do I care about not having a cell phone or not going on fancy vacations as much as I care about spending those formative years with them? Of course not. I mean, my kids would never say, Mom, you know, we'd rather have granite countertops, which, you know, and you think about it, really. I mean, people will say, oh, we need two incomes to survive these days. Well, I look at the average house nowadays, and it is double the size of the average house 50 years ago. And yet 50 years ago, people were having larger families. Nowadays, people might have one, maybe two children, and yet they think that they need these giant houses and these two new cars in the driveway, that they have to go away on vacation once or twice a year. I think it's really sad because those things come at a cost, and the cost is not spending those formative years bonding with your children.
Lydia Lovrick is a mother of three children in Canada. She's a frequent guest commentator for BBC Radio. She's author of a recent column for the Huffington Post titled, Dear Daughter, Here's Why I Don't Work. You'll find a link to this column and to Lydia's blog at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Lydia, thank you very much.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back from this break on this Friday afternoon, March the 27th, you've heard a lot about the Four Blood Moons. That makes the rounds in social media. There are books that are sold in Christian bookstores. John Hagee made a lot about the Four Blood Moons prophecy. We'll find out what it is on the other side of the break as we do This Week in Pop American Christianity with Chris Rosebro. Then we'll round off everything today playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
She tells me to stop and stay.
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.
Real Reformation Radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Oh Lord.
Listen to chapel services live weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana at issuesetc.org. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel, live weekday mornings 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google Plus. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.